Chapter 24. Aspen. As soon as the ward circle around the dragonling was cut, Aspen's life sense was able to touch the small form that lay within. He could instantly tell that a tiny flicker of life still burned within the small, tattered spirit, though the body could barely sustain it. Even as he watched, the glimmer sank lower, and the darkness that aided all of the Masker's victims rose an equivalent amount. He had a sudden horrible feeling that if he delayed too long, that light would go out, but the dragonling spirit would be trapped in undeath, rather than departing for the blessed forgetfulness of Atai's cool embrace. He scooped the baby into his arms, gently lifting the too light head so it was supported on his forearm. Turning to Rouge, who looked more than a little green beneath the warm brown of her skin, he said, "Release the rest of the prisoners. Just cut the wards. If they're sapient and want to come, bring them with you. Gather everything you can. Burn everything else. We'll have to go back out through the tunnel in Beryl's prison." Rouge stared at him, though having something to do was already bringing some of the light back into her hazel eyes. "But how will Beryl get out?" Smiling a bit, Aspen answered, "You'll see." He headed for the door, cradling the small creature in his arms like the precious life that it was, even as he began, ever so gently, feeding his healing magic into the small form. If he did too much too quickly, the weakened body would attempt to repair itself using resources it no longer had, and he could kill the dragonling as surely as the Maskers would have. His long legs ate up the distance between the laboratory and the throne room, and in less than a minute, he found himself standing in front of the door that they had left behind at least a quarter hour before. The baby dragon was beginning to tremble in his embrace, and the eye he could see was open and clear, but terrified. If it woke any more before he reached its mother, it might try to attack him, and he couldn't defend himself if he wanted the creature to survive. He cut off the flow of mana to his gentle healing spell, and the baby dragon's eye drifted closed almost instantly. This time, though, he could feel the soft flutter of its heart within its thin body, and the ribs rose and fell enough to be visible if one looked very closely. Cautiously, Aspen pulled open the door, feeling the limp tail drop from his embrace and brush the floor as he did. With urgent movements, he resettled the small creature, and darted through the opening. The room beyond was dim now, since travelers seemed to have a magpie's fascination with all things shiny, and took anything that came within their reach. Only a few glowstones, placed high above in filigreed sconces, still cast their illumination down into the space below. Aspen's toe caught on the first step up to the colossal, garish golden throne, and he stumbled. Desperately, he clutched the dragonling to his chest as he swore at his apparent inability to remember to bring a damned light. The baby dragon squeaked so softly that the sound was nearly lost in his own grumbling, but a moment later an enormous clawed foot had punched through the wall between the throne room and the room where Beryl lay captive. Though she was captive no longer. Broken chains dangled from the metal loops that circled her neck and wrists, and her one remaining eye was wild as she brought it down to peer through the fresh opening. Aspen lifted the small form in his arms, offering it to the desperate mother, and she scrambled backwards to make room in what would have been a comical fashion if it hadn't been driven by such desperate fear. "Is he dead? I will destroy them all." The voice drilled into his brain, making him stagger once again, but his dexterity was high enough that he caught himself without disturbing the child in his arms. Fortunately, as Beryl backed up, she stopped blocking the light that came through the 10-foot-high hole in the wall, so he was able to avoid the worst of the rubble piled on the ground. "Beryl, he lives." Aspen had to raise his voice to be heard over the scrabble of claws on stone and the soft keen that was beginning to rise from the mother dragon's throat. She stopped crying immediately and thrust her head forward on her long neck. Aspen laid the bony little body on the ground between the blue dragon's huge forelimbs, and she nosed at her baby. "I do not smell life in him." The mother dragon's voice was so forlorn that Aspen was compelled to rest a reassuring hand on the ragged scales closest to him. "It is there but fragile. We must be very cautious, or we may lose the chance to save him. I think they were using him to test whatever they were doing to you, but his body was unable to bear up under it. Still, if he dies with this taint upon him, I fear he may rise again as a zombie dragon. Zombies are mindless things, controlled only by their own hunger and their master's desires, unlike the bone dragon they were attempting to create in you. Do not lose hope, though. I believe we may yet snatch this victory from our foes." Now that the baby dragon was returned to his mother, Aspen was no longer concerned that the young creature might panic and attack as it recovered. Keeping his left hand on Beryl's foreleg, he rested the right on Malachite's thin shoulder. "Gina," he murmured. "An innocent has been injured in this hidden war. I beg you, please, aid me in cleansing him and his mother of the foul contagion that infects them." He almost smiled to himself, knowing that if his goddess was listening, she'd likely chide him for his formality. Nonetheless, he felt that the moment called for it, and that Beryl would appreciate it, even if Gina did not. "Gwino." He felt heat and light pulse from his hand as he used his new divine power for the first time since it had been granted to him. Under his right hand he felt soft, almost felt its scales grow hard and smooth. Beryl's arm, however, seemed to writhe beneath his touch. The dragon collapsed first to her knees and then to her belly, her head falling to thud onto the stones beside him. Aspen swallowed hard, knowing that he could easily have been crushed by that huge head, but he was unable to move or stop now that the process had begun. His life sense saw that the baby dragon's spirit was clean of the black flaws that had marked it, and it was now whole and strong again. The ribs beneath his palm rose and fell in deep cleansing breaths. He could still feel each bone in the dragonling's side, but the life within the small body was strong and bright. Beryl wasn't faring as well. Her flesh knit, and the worst of the abscesses and wounds closed, revealing silver-blue scars. The lesser injuries vanished entirely, but the broken and missing scales did not repair themselves, nor did her missing eye recover, though the socket now looked healthy and clean. Worst, however, was her spirit. It was cleansed, yes, but the tattered edges still fluttered, instead of becoming whole cloth once more. Frayed threads seemed to blow in an unfelt wind, and the holes left by Apophis's predations refused to close. When the light dimmed, Aspen found himself abruptly exhausted, feeling as if every speck of mana had been drained from him by his efforts, and he too fell to his knees. "I'm sorry, Beryl. You accepted what was done to you, though it was under duress, and my skill cannot repair the damage done. It will get no worse at least, but I fear that you will never again be as you once were." The mother dragon's huge blue eye was staring at Aspen in something he could almost believe was awe, except that he wasn't certain her species could feel such a thing. The enormous creature levered herself back to her knees, stretching her wings up behind her. The bones of these appendages were still clearly visible, but they were covered in fragile silvery skin that seemed made up of as much magic as flesh. She lowered her head and gently nudged at her baby. Malachite, still far too thin but now uninjured, with gleaming green scales covering his small body, slowly opened eyes that gleamed like fractured emeralds. "Mama?" came a small mental voice, and Aspen smiled broadly. Something large and brilliant formed in the corner of Beryl's single eye, and she tilted her head so that a brilliant pale blue sapphire, nearly as large as Aspen's hand, fell onto the ground beside him. "I thank you, mortal." The huge neck curled around the comparatively tiny dragonling, entirely concealing him from Aspen's view. "Take this stone. I must go take my child home so that we may recover, but know that if you are ever in true need, I will come to aid you if you break this gem. Once only, for that is all I am allowed by the pact between my race and the gods, I will come, and lay down my very life for yours, if it is needed." Aspen shook his head, though he removed his cloak and carefully wrapped it around the stone, tying the precious bundle to his belt with the coat sleeves. "I pray that time will never come, my friend. Only take your son and flee while you may." The huge body coiled, powerful muscles bunching as the dragon prepared to move. "Will you be well?" She sounded dubious, but he could see that all she really wanted was to take her child and escape. He nodded. He eyed the ceiling, which seemed both ridiculously high above him and yet far too close to the dragon's raised head. "Try not to drop the building on us if you would." Beryl bared her gleaming white teeth, once again set in gums of a healthy deep red. "I will do my best." She pointed her head up and breathed. Aspen watched in awe as the stone melted away above her. There had never been many dragons in the world. They lived for centuries, but the few females bore only two or three clutches, and produced only one or two offspring at a time. In large part, this was because, unlike most other reptiles, dragons gave birth to live young, and during the last year or so of their gestation, the mothers were earthbound. This was the most vulnerable period of their lives, since not only did they depend on their mate or mates to bring them food, they also could not flee from attackers. As a result of the relative rarity of the majestic creatures, as well as their tendency to willingly snack on the occasional sapient being, most dragons were known by name. The few hundred who still survived were listed in a book that sat on a dusty shelf in Aspen's house. Beryl was a blue acid dragon. Her breath would melt anything it touched, including stone, metal, and of course, flesh. According to a treatise on dragons, wyverns, basilisks, and hydras, she was mated to Peridot, the last of the green water dragons. At least he had been the last, until Malachite was born. Now, with her comparatively tiny precious child clutched in her foreclaws, that ancient dragon rose on her hind feet, taller and taller as she melted a hole through the ceiling of the room in which they stood. At last, her oddly beautiful bone wings began to move, beating faster and faster until there seemed to be a storm trapped in the chamber with them. Aspen found himself clinging to the wall so he wouldn't be blown around, and he was glad that no one else had come with him when he came to return Malachite to his mother. His goddess-boosted strength was barely enough to allow him to keep a grip on one of the pillars that had supported the ceiling. Had, because the ceiling was now almost entirely absent. Far in the distance, stars shone, and he could tell that Beryl had had to melt through several meters of stone and earth to reach the open air. The great dragon paused, impossibly hovering in midair, doubtless aided by more magic than any human would ever be able to bring to bear. A gleaming sapphire eye looked down at him. "Be safe." "Thank you," she said simply, and then with a few more wingbeats, she had lifted away and was gone. Leaving behind Aspen, a huge room now open to the sky, and a great deal of rubble and debris. Aspen's legs, which had been bearing his weight primarily through sheer force of will, collapsed out from under him, and he sat down both abruptly and ignominiously. His head fell back, and he realized that at some point during the recent cyclone, his hat had vanished. "Gina," he said to the stars above, "I never want to see another dragon in my life." "Are you kidding?" Rouge's voice came from behind him, and he turned his head to see her standing just on the other side of the hole in the wall that led to the throne room. Her eyes were huge and shining. "That was awesome."